All right, so I wanted to start out by talking about what the book of Job is and what it is not about. And you might say, well, that's an easy one, because the book of Job is about Job, but that would be wrong. The book of Job is about Job, but really the book of Job is about God. And so when you think about this account, and as we read through and study through, and we're going to talk about in what way that's true, but it really is about faithful servants of God interacting with this world and interacting with their God and processing these things and what that means. So you have to recognize that we have some background information. We don't have everything, but we have some background information that I don't think Job had. And I don't know that he ever had it. Okay? So when we read Job 1, we're getting some of that background information when we see this situation with Satan and God having this conversation about Job, this dialogue about Job and all of that. And that's very important to the story. It really is. But I don't know that Job ever had to have that or was given that information. And so really we might put the question this way, is God worthy? Now, of course, we say, of course, God's worthy of all praise and honor and adoration and all of that. But as we progress, I hope that I can pull some of this out that will benefit us. And when we think about why this question would be asked, the account of Job is going to be helpful for us. But we are going to be dealing with a very thorny issue regarding suffering. And I'm sure we've talked about, you know, why does God allow suffering? And that can be a worthwhile question. But when we think about this particular account and when we think about Job and the reality of suffering, I don't think there's any of us that question that suffering is going to come our way. I mean, that's a reality. Now, however someone may process that or not process that, that is reality. We live in a world in which suffering comes upon us and pain comes upon us. And the question again is, what is our perception of those particular things? And so there's no question that our lives from time to time are punctuated with severe hardship or heartaches or headaches or however you want to say that. But I think what Job presents is a real challenge to many of us. It's not an issue of saying, okay, there's suffering in the world. We know there's suffering in the world. Job would have known there was suffering in the world. But Job truly believes he's being treated unfairly. And never throughout Job does it say, okay, I'm guilty, I deserve this, this should have happened to me. That never happens. And Job holds to his integrity, and that's what he should have done. That's what he should have done, is held to his integrity. Even though his friends have some different ideas, and we're going to talk about why that is, this idea of, I think, unfairness. Now, we can talk about, was God unfair with him or not? But the bottom line is, it doesn't, when we look at this situation, Job is saying, I'm innocent. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean Job never made any mistakes. That's not his point. But he was not, in his mind, deserving of this. He had not committed some heinous sin that would have caused, you know, some judgment to be poured out upon him. And that's what his friends try to argue. But what's interesting about the story is that at the end of the way, what does God say about his friends' perception of this? They have not spoken of me that which is right. And so they had a paradigm or a theology or a view of God that God says wasn't right. And so we'll talk more about that, and I think that should be encouraging to us and helpful to us. And so it's not the question of is life uncomfortable, we all know that, but the innocent suffering. Now I know you might come along and say, well, we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, but there is such a thing as innocent people suffering, and I think that's the kind of suffering that especially troubles us. And there are some people that may just want to stick their head in the sand, but really faith is not about ignoring questions. And I'll say this to you, if our faith has been constructed in a way in our minds or developed in our minds so we say, well, I'm just never going to ask a question, we really do set ourselves up for problems. We set ourselves up for failure. Now, there is a point at which I recognize God transcends me. He's beyond me. I trust Him. I put my confidence in Him. But there's nothing wrong with asking questions and seeking God in the process. And that's a healthy thing. That's what faith does. It's not just fill in the blank. There's some important fill in the blank questions we might need to ask. But our faith has more of a dynamic than that. And so that's precisely what we see with Job. It's not that his life was just difficult. To him, it seemed unfair. He can see no reason for what he suffers. In fact, the whole background of the story only works if that's the case. I mean, if Job deserves some judgment from God, and that's why he's suffering, this is a different story. This is a different account. In order for this to work, and we're going to look at Job chapter 1, Job needs to be an upright man. And that's exactly who he is. That's who he is. That's who God says he is. He says he was a righteous man. He was an upright. He was a faithful man. And yet he would go through these sufferings. Now, what is Satan's view of Job? Just thinking through this, and we'll read Job 1 in a minute, but what is Satan's view of Job? Or at least if he's trying to prognosticate or predict what is going to happen. Job?
Job is righteous only because he has
life. Yeah. You've put this hedge around him, you've blessed him, you've provided for him. Why wouldn't he be serving you? Now, one of the things that's interesting about that is that is how Satan thinks. That is satanic thinking. And so, you know, it's kind of like somebody who you do business with, and they're always lying, and they're always thinking you're lying to them because that's what they would do. And Satan is saying, look, of course that, but if we change the context, if we change the context for this upright man, and it's not so easy anymore, and you take these so-called blessings away from him, now what's he going to do? Okay? And his thinking is he'll turn away from God. He's not going to be faithful to God. And so that's Satan's thought about Job. Alan, did you have anything to add to that?
It reminds me of the thing that everybody has a pride.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Right.
Now, what's the underlying thought about that is that God in and of himself, if this context changes, is not worthy of Job, or that Job will not deem him worthy of serving him, to serve him even when things are difficult. And that's the underlying kind of cut, that the reason, you know, it'd be like if you said to a husband, well, you know, the only reason your wife is with you is because of what you physically give her financially. Well, what have you just said? Well, there's a lot of things that you've said. So there is that cut, and we're going to come back to why that is. Okay. Now, somebody else, Kelton.
When you made that
comparison
argument that God doesn't deserve to be served, but God gets
there. Hang on to that, because I'm going to be right on top of that in just a minute. But I don't know that that's not what Job had thought in the past himself. That not in the way Satan's presenting it, but we're going to talk about the retribution principle in a minute. Because sometimes that is how God operates. It's just not the only paradigm in which God operates. And that's a big part of this story. So we'll come back to that. Okay. But anyway, so let's look at Job chapter 1. And let's read verses 6 through 12, Job chapter 1. Now, before we read that, of course, verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. That's about as good a description as you're going to get. And that's the kind of man Job was. So he was not a rebellious man toward God. He doesn't seem to be selfish or self-centered or anything like that. He was a righteous, upright man. Okay, let's read, Alan, if you would, read verses 6 through 12.
Satan answered the Lord and said,
and roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. Then Satan answered the Lord, Does Job fear God for nothing? Hast thou not made a hedge around him and his house and all that he has on his side? God has blessed the work of his hands in his possession and increased the land. But put forth thy hand now and touch him, all that he has, he will surely curse thee to thy face. Then the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him. Satan is hardened in the presence of the Lord.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's talk about what I'm using the phrase that others have, the retribution principle, okay, or retribution theology. Is that sometimes the case where God's activity or interaction with His creation is based on retribution? In other words, we do good, and God blesses. Sure. And we do evil, and there's some curse or judgment for it. Sure. I mean, you can go through the Bible, especially if you go through the Old Testament, and see how He interacted with Israel. And we could talk about some misunderstandings of that with the health and wealth gospel, but that kind of gets me off track of what I want to talk about. Even though Job presents a major problem to those ideas that as long as you're being faithful, you know, you're going to be wealthy and rich and free of sickness and all that kind of foolishness. The Bible's full of examples, and Job would have to be at the top of the list. Okay, so we know there's a problem in that. Now, it is true that we can find numerous passages. So, for instance, let's go to the first Psalm. And you see this sometimes. And Psalms helps us say, hey, this is a little bit more complicated. So if you're strictly going on retribution principle, that is, any bad thing that happens to somebody, that person must have sinned. Then, first of all, that's going to present a lot of other problems. But we can't deny that there are occasions where that is the case. There are occasions where judgment is poured out because somebody did that which was wrong. There are occasions in which, because God even says there are blessings associated with his people being faithful. But can we flip that? In other words, can we say that it is always the case that if what appears to be some evil or some negative thing, some difficult hardship or pain or suffering is upon somebody, that that's some kind of retribution? There are times where retribution is the case, but is that always the case? Now, if you are strictly operating out of a retribution principle, and you're Job's friends, and you see Job from what you believe, and this is the only, if you're thinking this is the retribution principle, and I'm going to apply that thing, you know, I'm going to dot every I and cross every T, it has to be that way, in every situation, here Job is in this terrible situation, what conclusion will you come to? Yeah, I mean, Job's at fault. You remember in John chapter 9, even Jesus' disciples, do you remember what they said about the blind man there?
Did he sin or his parents
sin? That seems to be retribution talk. Okay. Very common idea. In the religious world today, I can remember my dad telling me, my sister got sick a lot when she was a baby, and there was a charismatic preacher at the hospital, and he basically told my dad that either my mom or my dad, had, you know, they hadn't been living right. They've sinned because she had this bad case of pneumonia. And so, you know, there are some false notions, and part of it is oversimplification of God and His interaction with His people and the world and the world in which we live. So I'm sorry, but it's not always a black or white A, B, C, or D answer to everything. That's not what faith is about. If that's my view of faith, I'm in for some difficult questions ahead. Okay. So when we look at Psalms 1, This is a case that seems to be saying it is presenting that retribution notion. So verse 1, how blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night, and he'll be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season. And its leaf does not wither, and in whatever he does, he prospers. The wicked, now really notice verses 4, 5, and 6. He says, the wicked are not so, but they are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Now that is absolutely true in the grander scheme of things. And there are plenty of Psalms, for instance, even within the Psalms, that speak to this notion of the wicked being punished. David, in his imprecatory prayers, even prays that retribution would be brought. Okay. Galatians 6 says, those who sow to the flesh, of the flesh will reap what? Corruption. Those who sow to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap life everlasting. That's absolutely true. No compromise about that. However, even within the Psalms, we understand that while if we look at things in a broad way, sometimes here, even in this life, there's retribution, but not always. Now, we know if we look at it in a more absolute way or comprehensive way, that if we were to think about final judgment, that's true. There's not going to be one wicked person left standing. Okay? God's going to bring retribution. He's going to bring judgment. He's going to show mercy to his people. I understand that. Okay, and we get that. And there's passages that speak to that. However, turn to Psalm 73. And you probably have read this, Asaph's statements. Now, what does he say in Psalms 1? He says, and it seems very much like the retribution principle. The wicked are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. But Asaph says he almost lost his faith. Because there were some aspects in real time right now that didn't seem to always match up with it. Now, it's true regarding final judgment, we understand. But there's some aspects of living here where it doesn't seem you can operate out of a purely, strictly retribution paradigm. This is what was bothering Asaph. It's bothered you before, probably. And so, let's look at it. He says, surely God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet came close to stumbling. My steps had almost slipped. Well, why was that? Well, look at verse 3. He says, for I was envious of the arrogant, and I saw the prosperity of the wicked. Wait a minute. The prosperity of who? The wicked. But Psalms 1 speaks of the fact that God's going to eventually bring judgment on all of the wicked. But that doesn't mean here in this life things always, this side of eternity, operate in that and function in that paradigm. Everybody with what I'm saying? Yeah, that's true eventually from God's judgment. And even on occasion it's true now. God brought judgment on peoples, on Egypt, on Babylon. Yes, God sometimes does that. But that doesn't mean that's always the case. So if the expectation is that that's always going to be the case, then there's going to be some wrong thinking. We go further in verse 4, for there are no pains in their death, and their body is fat, and they're not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like mankind. Therefore pride is their necklace, and the garment of violence covers them. Their eye bulges from fatness. Their imaginations of their heart run riot. They mock and wickedly speak of oppression. They speak from on high. They have set their mouth against the heavens, and their tongue parades through the earth. Therefore, his people return to this place, and waters of abundance are drunk by them. They say, how does God know? And is there knowledge with the Most High? Behold, these are the wicked, and always at ease. They have increased in wealth. Surely in vain I have kept my heart pure and washed my hands in innocence. Why do I work so hard? Now what's his point? Why is he saying that? Why is he saying, why have I worked so hard to keep my heart pure If what? Yeah, it's not the godly that seems to be benefiting, it's the ungodly that seems to be benefiting. What's he saying? This whole, if we're strictly going to go on retribution principles, it's inverted. It seems backwards to me. It seems like the righteous should be prospering, but the unrighteous seem to be prospering. Now we're going to go further with this, but that's what Asaph is struggling with. Okay. Out. Yeah, well, I was trying to do it before, but again, I would say it's as if you are, let me think how I want to say this. If you are faithful to God, all things will be well. All things will be well.
To me, it sounds like a transaction.
Yes.
Where you've got value exchanged for value. If I give God good value, He's going to give me good value back. If I give Him evil value, He's going to, which, in a sense, is true, but we don't. It's not equity. It's not okay. I give God something of X amount of value, and He's going to give me something. He always gives far greater.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that idea of earning and exchange.
And I would even say that could be actually a dysfunctional relationship if. And when we get further in Job, we're going to talk about this, the nature of a loving relationship and how that works.
You know, we talk about meritorious works.
Yeah.
It all seems tied together with that.
Yeah. And it does seem to me that clearly Job's friends think that they can't, and I'm going to try to explain this in just a little bit better, but they can't get into their mind how it's in their mind. It's either, you know, God's fault or Job's fault. It can't be God's fault, so it has to be Job's fault. You see what I'm saying? Because, well, God has to operate the way we think He ought to operate, and so if we can't say He's not operating the way we think, so it has to be Job's fault. That's the only answer left. But we'll come back to that. But yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, so in the 73rd Psalm, just a little further. He's struggling with this. However, you'll notice in verse 16, he said, when I pondered to understand this, it was troublesome in my sight. Until, verse 17, I came to the sanctuary of God, then I perceived their end. And so, here's the thing. Even though that's the case right now, he says, when I went and worshiped God and thought about spiritual things, I realized there's more than right now. So even though it may seem that way in what's going on right now, I have to look at it from a different vantage point. And so he says, I went into the sanctuary of God, then I perceived their end. Surely you set them in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction. How they are destroyed in a moment. They are utterly swept away by sudden terrors. Like a dream, verse 20, when one awakes, O Lord, when aroused, you will despise their form. When my heart was embittered and I was pierced within, then I was senseless and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You have taken hold of my right hand. With your counsel, you will guide me. And so he says, I've had to learn better. He says in verse 26, my flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. God doesn't perceive of things in time the way we perceive of them in time. He understands there's time. He created time. But he can operate within that structure, but he actually exists outside of time. So Asaph, but I just wanted you to see, Asaph says, well, it's not that every situation right now works that way. And if I try to process this in that manner, it's going to present a problem. All right, so let's go back to Job 1. And let's think about this. So,
Bruce?
Yeah, go ahead.
Psalm 37
is
somewhat akin to 73, where the evil fret not, neither be envious of them,
mm-hmm.
for they shall soon be cut off the grass.
Yeah.
The
grass. Yeah.
They've got their day coming.
Yes.
They may be prospering now, but the day's coming.
Right. Right. That's right. That's right. And there'll be some sections kind of like that in Job as well. All right. So we read chapter 1. And so Satan's argument is, well, wait a minute. Isn't this kind of ethically counterproductive? If you are faithful to God, then you're blessed. Well, are you faithful to God because you're blessed? His argument is, you take the blessing away and everything's going to fall out from underneath Job's faithfulness. Okay? This is the whole argument. Now, this is what I was saying to you. If God, it wouldn't work for God to choose somebody that's not upright. That wouldn't serve any point. So if he chooses somebody that is unrighteous, then we're back to him just pouring out retribution and judgment on that person. That doesn't serve anything. So Job is somebody that God brings up and basically says, what about Job? Job is upright. Job is faithful. And Satan's retort to that is, well, yeah, but, you know, you've put this hedge around him, you've blessed him, you've given him these provisions, etc. So this is kind of what he's saying. But Job eventually is going to say, well, isn't it also bad policy for the faithful to suffer? I mean, why should the faithful suffer? I don't feel like I've done anything to merit this. His friends are going to say, oh yeah, but you did. You need to just confess it and acknowledge it right now, because that's how God works. If you're suffering, it's because God is punishing you for some sin, and Job is saying, but I haven't sinned. Well, let's say it's either you or God here, and it can't be God, so it must be you. And that's fundamentally the argument we'll get into. So, but Job is saying, wait a minute, isn't the suffering of the godly counterintuitive in some sense, which is kind of what we've been talking about. And so you have a lot of things going on. This isn't so much about Job. Job is the, you know, case in point. But this is about God and how God functions and how God operates. And can we take this one paradigm and shove everything about God in that paradigm? And if he's not in my box and the way I've decided to think about him, then he's not who he ought to be. And if he doesn't relieve all of my suffering immediately, then why should I serve him? Well, all that does is serve to confirm the argument Satan was making in the first place, which is the reason people serve you is because of your blessing upon them. So when I turn around and say, well, look at what I'm going through, look at my pain, look at my suffering, why should I be, you know, why should this be happening? And there's a lot of things we could talk about this, about sin and the effects of sin and the consequences of sin. But let's put all that on the shelf for a minute. There's a sense in which we haven't thought through what we are saying. Okay. And it reflects, I think, a short-sighted view of who God is. All right. Yes, Jeff.
You're not saying God didn't build the hedge.
No. No. I think he blessed Job. Okay, go ahead.
Sometimes God does things,
yes,
that are outside of our reason or understanding. I can give you the negative example of Job, that's Abraham.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He went down into Philistia, sinned, lied, and ended up with money in his pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that doesn't fit anything. Mm-hmm. Third thing going on here that doesn't fit either one of these.
Okay. Go on with where you're going with that.
God is blessing Job.
Uh-huh.
My understanding of it is that you have an infinite, omnipotent, omniscient God who has already prepared a scenario for this great question to be answered.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, all those. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't even begin to understand what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Or why I'm doing it, or how I'm doing it. And so the point is, relative to myself, I need to understand. I'm asking the wrong question, and I'm asking why.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm with you. Okay. That's what we were going to get to, but this is not about why.
It's not about why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the bottom line is, if I know anything at all, I'm still getting less than I deserve.
That's true. That's true. That's right.
I don't know that Job was in a position to understand that as well as we are. But the reality is that what he had, he did deserve in the first place.
Yes, that's right. It was
what
so gross.
Was not as bad as what he should have received in the second place.
Okay.
From the standpoint of just being a sinner, he was in the
Oh, place. Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
So, yeah. And so grace is not even here in the discussion.
Right. Right. Yeah, we hadn't got there yet. But
I'm just trying to get on the same page with you.
Okay.
With where you're going.
Okay. Well, where I'm going is Satan is making an argument. I think this truly, from what I read Job say, is going to be how he feels. And then we're going to get into how God actually is operating in this scenario.
Yeah,
right. That's where we're going.
Really, God doesn't come back and explain it.
No. When we get to the divine speeches, then we're going to come to that. I'm just setting up the various approaches, I guess I would say, that aren't accurate. Job's not right about this. He's not processing it. He's right about, I think he is holding to his integrity. I don't think he was guilty of what his friends are thinking that he was guilty of.
No.
Or anything like that. And Satan is making an argument, so I'm just trying to get across that the way he actually functions and works is going to come later. We're going to learn that as things unfold. Okay? So that's where I'm going. All right. Let's see. All right. Let's move on. Okay, I'm going to skip through this because I don't think some of this really matters to us that much. I did want to look a little bit at the structure before we get back into the story itself. So this prologue in chapters 1 and 2 is in a narrative form, and you can tell that by reading chapters 1 and 2. Job's opening lament really hits in Job chapter 3. I'm just kind of giving you an idea where this is going to go. There are going to be a number of dialogues and cycles of speeches, and sometimes this is where some people kind of get, you know, they feel like it's repetitive, but there is a purpose in all of this, and you're going to see those dialogues in Job chapter 4 through 14, chapters 15 through 21, chapters 22 through 27. There's going to be a wisdom hymn in Job chapter 28, there will be discourses on the part of Job, Elihu, and then, of course, God, which is where I think we do get some descriptions of God Himself and the nature of God. And, of course, He's going to say that Job's friends have not spoken of Him that which is right. Now, it's toward the end of the book. Job goes on and on and on and on, and he seems to be asking for this opportunity in the presence of God, but when he actually comes to think about being in the presence of God, things change. And he is, I think, lovingly corrected by the Lord regarding how he was looking at these things, which speaks, I think, to what Jeff was saying. But it is important to understand there are some competing notions, neither of which are accurate, but that are trying to look at this. Okay. And then you're going to have Job's closing statements in chapter 42, which we eventually will spend some time on there. And then at the end, we have that narrative form where it speaks of Job's blessing toward the end. Okay. I want to go over a couple of things here. I've got just a little bit of time. Give me 1 minute. All right. And today, and we're going to get into more detail of the account itself, but I want to go over just a few principles that are important that I think are beneficial to us. Number one of the things we find out is that suffering is universal. Now, that's something we know. good, what we consider good people, what we consider people that are rebellious to God, suffer. Okay. Now, it is true that we've all sinned, as I mentioned previously, and that we're all in need of God's grace, etc. But suffering is something that comes upon all of us. We could talk about natural disaster. We can talk about disease. We can talk about all of these things. But the thing that often comes to be an issue for folks is how do I perceive of the nature of God and the reality of what I'm going through right now. Okay, and I do think we learn regarding God's power and God's wisdom that He transcends us, that He is beyond us, etc. Now I want to talk about a little bit this issue of we were talking about the retribution principle. And basically, the retribution principle says that the righteous will prosper and the wicked will suffer. And both are in proportion of their respective behavior. And that's what seems to be fair to us. Now, granted, you could look at this from the standpoint, since we've all sinned and we've all fallen short of the glory of God, even the most faithful servant of God doesn't deserve anything God might bless him with, per se. It is by His grace and His mercy. But when we think about Job's friends, we think about what they thought, and we think about some of these theological issues within the book of Job. We do know suffering is universal. We do know behind the majority of suffering, when I say the problem of God, is us coming to a deeper, greater understanding of God. And what I was trying to say to you is, while there are some senses where you can see where that retribution principle makes sense, there are some circumstances where it does not completely fit. It just doesn't. That was what caused Asaph to have some issues, and he had to come to a deeper understanding of the Lord. Now, let's talk about what we're dealing with here. So, yes, Job was a sinner like anybody else. However, Job is described as a faithful servant of God. His friends' perception of Job, when they begin to try to explain things, is what? Do they perceive of him as a faithful servant of God? No, they do not. Now, they might have before, but now that the suffering is on, this is their argument. And in their mind, because they're in this retribution thought and principle, here we have God's justice. It's either, in their mind, it's God's justice or Job's righteousness. And they're saying, look, Job, it must be you. I don't think they had any thought that it's because of God's faithfulness, and it's because of Job's faithfulness that we even have this account, that we have this story. And so God, and we'll talk more about this next Sunday, but God in Job is demonstrating the very opposite of what Satan argued, and really the very opposite of what the friends are going to argue, that Job was a faithful servant of God, and he wasn't just serving God because of what he could get out of it. Now, that doesn't mean God doesn't bless His people. It doesn't mean there aren't some people that do the wrong thing and still get a blessing from God. But what it does mean is, the whole point in this story is that Job had been a faithful servant of God, and if your view is, if you're faithful, you're always going to be blessed, you know, with a sick-free, easy life, that is not the truth. Okay. And so his friends were wrong in their perception of God, and thus they're coming to a wrong conclusion about what's going on with Job. And we'll talk more about that. We'll stop there.